Welcome to Common Ground, the program that deals with addiction and recovery. Too many people lack the information that this issue is an epidemic and believe that the problems associated with it are limited to the addict. Nothing could be further from the truth. We are all affected. Our communities, schools, where we work, even our families. We all have a stake in this. We are all on common ground. The answers lie in education, prevention, and treatment, and start with information. Through interviews with experts, medical specialists, and those themselves recovering, we provide that information so that together we can make choices that will benefit individuals, families, and our communities, ultimately saving lives. And now your host, Jim Hall.
Good evening, my friends. This is Jim Hall, and welcome to Common Ground. We've got a great show in store for you this evening. My guest who we'll be talking to in 7 minutes or so, somewhere around there, 8:40, is Jacqueline Eckern. And Jacqueline is the founder and president of Addiction Hope, a wonderful, wonderful organization. So I can't wait to talk to her. They deal with all sorts of types of addictions there, eating disorders, and alcohol, drugs, and so forth. Gambling, and she has a belief in a holistic recovery that addresses all of the destructive patterns of behaviors engaged in by the individuals. So I'm really, really looking forward to that. So, and also, I want to give a special shout out to my friends down at Old Colony. I'm going to try to start a new practice directed just for these particular group of friends, but it's really, anybody can certainly benefit by it, I hope. And that's just a brief message, a spiritual message, if you want, every week that I'll try to give out. And the one for today is this: tell me and I'll forget, show me and I may not remember, involve me and I'll understand. Words of wisdom, folks. Anyway, before we talk to Jacqueline, I had a wonderful opportunity to go to an event Monday evening over in Scituate, put on by another great organization called Scituate FACTS. That's an acronym, F-A-C-T-S, and they have been doing some marvelous work for a few years now. And last week's show, we had Anne-Marie Galvin on, who was talking about this event and about giving us a little bit of a history of the work that Scituate FACTS do, and they really concentrate on school-age kids, young adults, and so forth, and they just do wonderful, wonderful things. But they had a lot of representatives there from various treatment places and help groups and things, and it was just wonderful. I had many, many friends there, and it was good to see, and it was very, very well attended. The keynote speaker was a gentleman, John Kelly, Dr. John Kelly, and he was just outstanding. He had a PowerPoint presentation, and boy, he really grabbed my interest, and he just said some wonderful things. And one of the things that he talked about, especially in the prevention side of things, but it also goes beyond prevention and into people at treatment that are also in recovery. And what that is the whole stigma of addiction, and how that is just counterintuitive to helping people in recovery because of this stigma. And the example he gave, for years and years now, first of all, the medical society, American Medical Society, has been classifying addiction as a disease since the 1950s. And more recently, on their, I think it's called the DCM, the manual they use for coding and things like that, where they assign certain codes to different types of medical procedures and things like that. And it's kind of like the Bible of the medical industry. And they have recently, a couple of years ago, they put it into a classification of a disorder. It's still, referred to as a disease, but they specifically in this manual put it down as a disorder. And so, for years that they've been referring to people as substance abusers and substance abuse disorder and things. And he's really trying to change that right now, and to get the wording that is not so negative, because when you think of abuse, automatically, you know, people come up with their own ideas in their mind. It's like, well, you know, it's something that somebody can stop if they really want to. You know, they're abusing it, but it's only because they don't want to stop or something like that. And that's not the case. You know, if you have this disorder or disease of addiction, you're under that control, and you know, you can arrest it and start recovery and move on. You're never fully cured of there. It's a chronic condition, but you know, people do put it into remission, like other diseases, and then they go on into recovery on there. And so he's referring to it as substance use disorder. And it just made so much more sense. And in the example he gave, and he mentioned that these people have it right. The people, and I'll probably bring this up with Jacqueline and get her opinion on it too. The people with eating disorders, for example, they don't call them food abusers on there. You know, they say that they have an eating disorder. And so his thinking is the same way, where he's trying to change that when it comes to substances and not call them substance abusers. You know, and this is not to make excuses for anybody or anything like that. But, you know, taking away some of the stigma, I think, is one of the better things that we can do in society. And, you know, both in a prevention end or, you know, people that have this disorder and they're trying to get into recovery. So that, you know, that's kind of just my thoughts on it anyway. So if you have any other opinions, you know, I'd love to you know, hear from you here. And by the way, this is, as always, it's a call-in talk show, and you can give us a call anytime, whether it's just to make a comment or if you have a question for one of our guests or something like that. I'd love to hear from you. You know, you're a big part of the show. This is your show. It's not my show. You know, I just kind of help try to facilitate the conversation, and the information comes from experts and people that are in the various fields surrounding addiction and recovery, like Jacqueline. So, you know, it's very important that you participate. So I'd love to hear from you. And by the way, you know, I haven't mentioned it in quite some time. I've got some outstanding Common Ground t-shirts. Looks like flashbacks right out of the 60s. They're a wonderful tie-dye made by a local organization right here in the South Shore, because we want to support our local businesses. They're called Threads and Ink. They're up in Pearl Street in Braintree. And they're really great. So, you know, they're free. They're free, you know, and they cost me some dough. I paid for them out of pocket, which I don't mind at all. You know, I would love to see them all over the place. I've given out quite a few already. I think I started with about 200, and I probably have about 70 or 80 left. So please, you know, if you're interested and you'd like a t-shirt, you know, you don't have to do anything other than just call, and I'll be happy to get one to you. I'll even spend a couple of bucks to mail it to you if you can't come to the station. So anyway, without any further delay, I want to get to my guest this evening. As I mentioned earlier, her name is Jacqueline Eckern. We have recently come in touch with each other a month or so ago, and I've learned a little bit about her and Addiction Hope, which she is the president and founder of, and I'm very interested and very happy to have her on the show this evening. Good evening, Jacqueline.
Good evening. How are you, Jim?
I'm wonderful. Now, you're based out of Oregon, so this is a Redmond, Oregon. And whereabouts is Redmond?
It is about 3 hours away from Portland, Oregon.
You're out there, and that's, I have noticed, if I'm not mistaken, I kind of watch the news, you know, the weather. I tend to focus on what's going on here in New England, of course, but, you know, occasionally something seeps in from other parts of the country, and you guys up in the Northwest have been unusually hot, haven't you?
Yes, we have. And what's interesting over here is everybody thinks of Oregon as such a rainy state, but actually in this Redmond Bend area, it's very hot and dry. Like today was 100 degrees.
Oh, my God.
That's kind of normal for us.
Wow. Well, listen, we don't, you know, the listeners here are I'm sure are not interested in me or you. Possibly, maybe they want to hear you regardless of what you say, but they're certainly not interested in me talking about the weather. So let's get into a little bit about yourself and what led you to found Addiction Hope, and then we can talk a little bit about the organization itself.
Wonderful. Thanks, Jim. Well, I am a licensed professional counselor, and I work with eating disorders and addictions, primarily eating disorders. But over time, I became more and more aware of the suffering involved with addictions, and that led to the development of the Addiction Hope website. I also have a successful eating disorder website, but I've noticed that there's a big demand for information and resources that are trustworthy online for addiction. We're trying to meet that need for folks.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, I want to mention something because prior to my introduction at the very beginning of the show, I mentioned something about eating disorder. And what it was I was at a seminar Monday night, and there was a wonderful speaker, Dr. John Kelly, who's associated with Mass General Hospital and Harvard Medical. He's been on the President's Council on Drug Abuse and involved in, various agencies. He's very, very well respected. And one of the things he talked about was removing the stigma of addiction. Specifically, he was mentioning about substance abuse and how the whole idea of the abuse thing is such a negative connotation, and it really kind of furthers the stigma that goes with it. And he mentioned that, you know, he prefers, and he'd really like to see the change take place, of it being referred to as someone that suffers. They're not substance abusers as much as they suffer from substance use disorder. And he said the food addiction people have it right. They don't generally call people food abusers. They say that they have an eating disorder. And he really liked that model, and he really wants to try to put it into practice when it comes to substance abuse as well. So what do you have any thoughts on that? Or
I sure do. That is just a fascinating topic to me, because what we often refer to in the field is the addiction model for treating substance addictions, process addictions, alcohol addictions, has not frequently been used in the eating disorder world. And so there's sort of some debate about this, about whether or not eating disorders and binge eating disorders, compulsive overeating, folks that are morbidly obese, do they have an addiction to food? And people get into pretty heated debates about that. And, you know, I can truly appreciate both views, and I bet you can too, Jim, because after you've been through life a little while, you're like, you know, each individual is so unique. Whatever recovery approach works for you, God bless you, go for that. But I think overall, they are finding a lot in neuroscience to back up that we do have brain chemical reactions with certain foods that do have sort of an addictive quality to them.
And I know in many cases there are co-occurring disorders, and quite often, people that have substance use disorder, it's frequent that they are also abusing other things. And I've noticed, and through the people I've come in contact, is quite often when they become abstinent in one area, whether it's alcohol or drugs, and they stop using and become clean, that unless the underlying causes and conditions are treated, that quite often that, you know, it can rear its ugly head in some other form, such as eating disorders or gambling issues or sex or anything like that.
Absolutely. And that's what we saw with, you know, Eating Disorder Hope. Our website was started in 2005, so it's been around for a long time. And we were continually receiving emails and calls from folks saying that they were struggling with addiction and additionally either had developed the eating disorder, or the eating disorder was there first, but then they developed a co-occurring issue with addiction. So they're very interrelated. I think folks just need to know that there are resources and there's hope out there, and it can be very discouraging, particularly when you have two issues going on. It can feel really overwhelming. But I know of so many cases of individuals that have overcome multiple issues in addition to addiction and are leading fulfilling lives that I think everyone has hope. And that's really one of my primary missions in life and in this website is to inspire folks to, you know, take that next step and believe that they can find recovery no matter how bad it is. His life can be so much better.
Well, Jacqueline, if you don't mind staying on the line, this is a fascinating conversation for me, and I'd like to talk a little bit more about things about the prevalence of addiction, the trends of addiction, and so forth, and about your organization. So please keep it tuned right here, folks, to Common Ground, Jim Hall. I'm your host. Give us a call if you have any questions or comments for Jacqueline. The number is 781-837-4900. We'll be right back.
Take a look around. What do you see? Is it the smile on your friend's face? Or is it the rising of the sun? For more than 150,000 people in Massachusetts alone, they can't see this. At the Talking Information Center in Marshfield, we broadcast our voices so that the visually impaired can hear what you can see. To volunteer your time and voice, or to donate to TIC, go online at ticnetwork.org or call us at 1-800-696-9505.
King Optical proudly supports the mission of Common Ground, providing focus to the community about substance abuse. Sharing our knowledge and experience improves the community, just as King Optical's years of eyewear experience has provided generations of patrons with proper-fitting lenses and frames, prescription sportswear, and specialty sunglasses since 1947. King Optical is located at 20 School Street West in Braintree. Call them at 781-843-2133. Online at kingoptical.net. King Optical and Common Ground, partners in a vision for healthier local communities.
Welcome back, my friends. This is Common Ground. My name is Jim Hall, and my guest this evening is Jacqueline Eckern, the founder and president of Addiction Hope. It's actually a web-based organization, so we're going to find out a little bit more about that. And I guess we can start, Jacqueline. Welcome back, by the way.
Thank you.
Why is your organization web-based?
Well, I think one of the key things is that most folks will look for resources either on a mobile device or online. And I think we use that instead of the Yellow Pages anymore. And also, maybe even more importantly, it's discreet. And sometimes this can be sensitive for individuals seeking treatment. And it's a nice way to privately research information, resources, what kinds of treatments are available, that sort of thing.
Well, you know, what type of people do you find are contacting you? The types of inquiries, are they people that are having a problem themselves, or you find that family members and loved ones are reaching out to you?
Yes. We have a lot of family members that actually reach out to us. I would say it might be a 60-40 split, actually, with the ones that actually communicate with us via email or telephone. Just really looking for some hope in pretty desperate situations. And they may need information about the drug or what are signs and symptoms. And we have all that on the website. Or they may need a specific treatment referral in their region or based on their insurance. We try to be as helpful as we can to help them find the support they need for their loved one. And then when it's the actual individual sufferer, it's basically the same thing. Usually when the sufferer themselves is reaching out, it's a pretty pinnacle moment. They're really hurting, and it seems like an optimum time to possibly make that change in their life. So we're excited when we hear from folks because we think it's a courageous step to even start pursuing information on how to get into recovery.
It's funny. I just had kind of an amusing thought came into my head here when you mentioned Yellow Pages, that some of our younger listeners are probably saying, "What's that?" Yellow Pages, huh? You mean pages pages on the computer that they're yellow? I don't understand. And, you know, I think that you know, especially the way the world is changing these days, and everything is technology now. And as you mentioned, mobile devices and computers and things are really, tablets are really the way the things are going, and certainly the way they're going to go in the future. And to a certain extent, I think people are very comfortable nowadays using that. So the fact that you, you know, have this type of service that's out there that is web-based, I think is very, very effective just for that reason. And there's somewhat of an anonymity factor that goes along with that. It's more comfortable for people than walking into an office. You know, you pull up to the parking lot of a building and you're wondering who's looking at you, and, you know, all sorts of thoughts going through your head. And, you know, you walk in and down a hallway to a door with a number on it, and, you know, not knowing what's behind it. And I think people are just so comfortable these days using resources online. So I congratulate you for that. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful idea. And as you said, you can still give, just as if someone was walking into an office setting, you can get all the history and details and things that you need, and be able to give the advice and referrals or whatever, you know, once you kind of diagnose the situation and, you know, find out what the best course of treatment is for each individual. So that's wonderful.
Well, thank you. We feel it's sort of a calling, and at the end of the day, the most fulfilling thing is just to help people find hope and healing and recovery. You know, that makes it all worthwhile. I know my own personal battle was with an eating disorder, but it was a very destructive disorder. So I feel that myself and anyone on our staff really can have compassion for any disorder, any process disorder. Even if we haven't experienced that particular issue directly, we know what it is to be wholeheartedly beat by something and floundering. And so I think there's a wonderful thing in taking our pain and converting it to helping others. And that's what we wish for our folks that come to our site, too, is that when they do find recovery and healing, that they will in some way give back and support the recovery community.
Right. Well, you know, people have to understand, and that's what we try to do, and one of the things we do to try to educate people out there is people don't ask to become alcoholics or heroin addicts or have an eating disorder. You know, it's not a choice that they make. You know, it's you know, it's not something that somebody wakes up with. You know, it's when they're 6 years old and say, oh gee, you know, I think I'll start using heroin in another 10 years or something. It's you know, and we've got to kind of take that away, and that's part of the stigma thing too. And people have to understand that, you know, and quite often when they're in the midst of this using or abusing, you know, and again, I'm trying to stay away from that word abuse, but, you know, that they don't have control over that situation there. And so, you know, that it takes some type of intervention in some way or another to break that cycle and put people into a state of remission on there. And that's certainly possible. And, you know, professional help is one of the best resources. I know that 12-step organizations do a wonderful job with that too. And, you know, my philosophy is that there's, you know, every tool that's available, you know, get as many tools as you can in your toolbox and use all of them in there. So, you know, that's my thoughts on it anyway. So, how about, does your site offer any therapy that takes place online or anything like that? Or
that's a great question. You know, I am a licensed therapist here in Oregon. However, we do not offer any psychological advice online. What we offer is psychoeducation. So the difference there is we provide information. We may describe different therapies that are available, such as cognitive behavior therapy and that sort of thing. We provide all kinds of information on signs of drug abuse or alcohol abuse or process addictions, and what treatment approaches are available and what the statistics are and things like that, and what kinds of treatment referrals are out there. But we steer away from giving psychological advice because that's really, I think, possibly, probably inappropriate online without really knowing the individual. We would encourage them to seek a therapist if, at the very least, if, you know, you can start on an outpatient level and see if that works before you have to go into a full residential program. And there's lots of therapists out there that have specialized in the treatment of addictions that can really get to know that individual and focus on them. And we can help them find that person.
I agree with you totally. You know, sometimes that will work fine for a lot of people, you know, and if they're fortunate enough to have a recognition of a, you know, their particular condition at an early enough stage, and sometimes just outpatient treatment or counseling or something like that can be effective enough to kind of, you know, have them develop that understanding that they need that, potentially this is a problem or it is now a problem and be able to do something about it. But certainly when, you know, many individuals, I know I can speak of at least for substance abuse, when they it becomes quite often necessary that they receive some type of hospitalization and inpatient treatment and things. Now, is that sometimes the case with eating disorders too? Do people get to a state where they're, you know, have really harmed themselves physically and, you know, that they need, you know, more or less immediate treatment for that, medical treatment?
Absolutely. And we have similar kind of levels of care. And typically with insurance and even just sort of common sense, we usually start at the lowest level and then go up. That saves people money, interruptions in their life, and that sort of thing. So initially, if a person were to present with some eating disorder symptoms and being troubled about that, perhaps an outpatient therapist and a nutritionist weekly could help them get on top of it and make enough progress towards recovery that they were on a good path. If that were not successful, then they might be referred on to what we often call a partial hospitalization program, where folks can go for like an evening program, say 6 to 9, Monday through Thursday, and get more intensive therapy, group support, and that sort of thing. And then if that wouldn't meet the need of the eating disorder sufferer, then there's a residential treatment where they're monitored full-time and serious health issues can be addressed. And there are some few hospitals in the country that are designed to meet folks' needs that are very, very ill, where their weight is so low that they're struggling possibly with cardiac arrest, potential congestive heart failure, all kinds of issues that could lead to their death if they didn't receive top medical care.
All right, Jacqueline, we're going to have to take our second break here, and I'm really enjoying this conversation. So, folks, if you are as well, but you have comments or questions, we'd love to hear from you. 781-837-4900. You're listening to Common Ground. My guest is Jacqueline Eckern, the founder and president of Addiction Hope. We'll be right back.
The South Shore's breaking news, weather, and traffic station.
95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com.
Do you know of any families who may need support or education about how to deal with a loved one who is going through a difficult time?
Is anyone you know struggling with an alcohol problem?
Do you know of anyone that has an eating disorder or mental illness?
Do you have anyone in your life that is struggling to become functional?
O'Connor Professional Group can help both you and your family through this tough situation.
O'Connor Professional Group offers services like case management, sober companions, consultations, family coaching, and interventions.
O'Connor Professional Group prides itself on offering individually tailored services to address the specific needs of each family.
O'Connor Professional Group offers these services in the Boston, Connecticut, and New York areas.
O'Connor Professional Group helps families navigate some of the toughest decisions they will ever have to make.
For more information, please contact O'Connor Professional Group at 617-910-3940, 617-910-3940,
or visit them online at O'ConnorProfessionalGroup.com.
Our region has the unfortunate distinction as one of the most opiate-soaked places in the country. And as the summer literally heats up, local law enforcement expect heroin use and overdoses to do the same. All this week and next week, WATD's Charles Mathewson presents a series on the problem and what people are doing about it. The heroin epidemic of southeastern Massachusetts. Mornings at 5:27 and 9:11, and during the WATD Midday Report at noon on 95.9 WATD.
Welcome back, folks, to Common Ground. And as I said, our guest this evening is Jacqueline Eckern, who's the founder and president of Addiction Hope. And it's really, really a pleasure. I'm really enjoying this conversation, Jacqueline. And I hope, you know, I know there are many, many people listening, but I hope somebody does have some questions out there. And certainly, if you're in a car or whatever and you're not comfortable calling, you can always contact me here at the station. And the best way to reach me is the simplest address is jimhall959@gmail.com. All right. What I was, I mentioned this seminar I was at the other night with Dr. Kelly, Jacqueline, and one of the things that surprised me and was that he was talking about the prevalence of addiction today and the number of people that are classified as addicts or substance use disorder. And, you know, and we're talking about not people that are just heavy drinkers or problem drinkers or drug users and so forth, which are millions and millions. But this was, you know, people that they consider to have the disease of addiction. And he was really referring to substance abuse, meaning alcohol and drugs, of course. And he had placed it at over 25 million, which just totally astounded me, you know, figuring we have a population now of, close to 300 million or so. So that is a lot of people. And then when he said he factored into the people that are maybe not classified as addicts, but abusers of the drugs, and including marijuana and things like that, it jumped up to over 50 million. So we're talking a whole lot of people. And I was wondering, because I don't have the statistics, or if you possibly have any indication of, for example, people that have eating disorders and how prevalent that is.
Sure. We estimate that about 10 million Americans struggle with eating disorders. And we have a lot of statistics on eating disorders on the eatingdisorderhope.com site, too. It's probably about 1% of males and up to 3% of females in the country.
That's, you know, that surprises me because, I thought it was a little bit more gender tilted, maybe, you know, 70% female and 30%. So that's, you know, that's a little surprising. It's less than that. It's not quite 50-50. But do you find that one sex or the other is more or less likely to seek treatment?
This is a really interesting topic, the male eating disorder phenomena that's occurring. And it seems like females would be more likely to seek treatment because it's a little more socially acceptable for females. But male eating disorders are growing. It's an ongoing issue. And part of it can be blamed on the media. You know, the best example I can think of is there were some advertising by a popular clothing company for teenage young 20s, and they would show these guys with these washboard abs, but they were also extremely lean. And there was a real heavy saturation of that kind of marketing starting maybe 3-5 years ago. And it's played out now to, you know, first graders wanting to have a six-pack or a muscle obsession. And so eating disorders are a developing issue for men, and they are increasingly being scrutinized for how their body looks, too, and starting, unfortunately, to view their body as a billboard more than, you know, the wonderful encasement of their soul and all the magnificent physical attributes their body's capable of doing.
Now, you mentioned, or it does in the article here, that you're a believer in holistic treatment. Can you go into that a little bit?
Sure. That's kind of a vague concept. I think everybody has their definition.
Right.
But in my terminology, what I'm referring to is I think that any addiction or eating disorder has a physical component, has a social component, has a psychological component, and a spiritual component.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things we often say in the eating disorder field is that for individuals that develop eating disorders, genetics loads the gun and the environment pulls the trigger.
Uh-huh.
I really kind of like that because it's so simplistic, but I think, you know, it's the combination of factors. You could have two kids that grew up with an alcoholic history in their family,
mm-hmm.
so there may be some genetic predisposition towards alcoholism, and they both may go through trauma in their household or their life,
mm-hmm.
and one may develop alcoholism and one may not, and that could have been because of their psychological makeup. It could have been the way they perceived the trauma, where the other individual maybe personalized it, or it hurt them more deeply, and the other one might be more able to just sort of roll with the punches. So there's so many factors that is the tipping point for an individual when they fall into addiction or they fall into eating disorders. And I wholly support what you're saying, that they're not to blame. Nobody chooses that.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Dr. Kelly, the other evening, he mentioned that, you know, the research that they're coming up with now, that they factor that genetics has about a 50% relationship to addiction on there. And just what you were saying there, I couldn't agree more wholeheartedly. There's more components to that, the psychological components and environmental and so forth in there. In my own philosophy, and it's been this way for years now, just as you explained that, you know, you could have a number of children growing up in an alcoholic home, perhaps, and only one becomes an alcoholic. And, you know, why is that factor? They all grew up in the same situation and basically, you know, had the same kind of chaos and things going around with it. And what I kind of developed, and it wasn't my own original thought, believe me, any of my thoughts aren't original when it comes to recovery. It's all what I've learned from other people. And the thought was that it wasn't so much what happened to me, and I'll speak individually, you know, for myself right here. It wasn't the things that happened to me that led to alcoholism and substance abuse. It was how I reacted to the things that happened to me, you know, And again, I think that's the case, and that's the second part. You know, there might be genetics involved, and you know, and you can have different people, and through various psychological, you know, things that might be going on or whatever, and one individual just might react to it totally different than another one does. You know, I think that makes up, if not the rest of the 50%, a good part of it. You know.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. And I think sometimes my experience in practice as a therapist and in my own recovery journey, I think there are some individuals that are just very sensitive in this world, and I probably am one of them. And sometimes, and I've seen this in some of my colleagues and friends that have struggled with addictions and eating disorders, their perception of trauma, their sort of narrative story of what happened to them and the conclusions they drew about life and themselves can really play into being more vulnerable to an eating disorder or addiction. But what I find really exciting is that we have this neuroplasticity in our brains. Neuroscience is really making advances. We have a long ways to go, but we're making progress, and we're learning that the brain can develop new neural pathways,
mm-hmm.
by the way we think or perceive situations. It's not easy. There's a lot of sort of reprogramming of our thoughts taking a look at situations that occurred, maybe observing what you concluded about it, questioning those conclusions, and then maybe looking, is there a more realistic way to perceive this? Like, you know, let's say a person grew up in an alcoholic home and their parent was verbally abusive to them. Well, they may struggle with low self-esteem, consequentially, the rest of it, you know, for many years. But you can go back and you can say, hey, the idea that I developed in my being that I am unworthy, that I am not good enough, is questionable. Mm-hmm. And then they might be able to replace that with a new perception of, you know, that individual that gave me that message was struggling and hurting, so it probably wasn't the most accurate. What has my life shown me? What gifts and talents do I have that do prove that I have some worth? Is there a more balanced approach to evaluating myself? And that's the kind of thing that's done in therapy and treatment that can be life-changing.
Right. Well, you know, and too often with not just people with the suffering from addiction, but just the world in general, is that, you know, we form our own conclusions about ourselves from outside sources and things instead of actually being able to look at, you know, deep inside of what we really are and be able to say, you know, I'm not that person. These outside factors kind of shape us in ways that sometimes aren't very healthy.
I agree. One of the reasons I founded Addiction Hope and Eating Disorder Hope is I have this concept, and this is what I worked with clients in therapy too, which is our internal sense of worth is really not based on appreciation or applause of others. It's not based on what we accomplish. It's not based on how we look or the contract we just signed as an athlete. Because all those things are very transient and unstable. Mm-hmm. But our inherent sense of worth internally, when we can get into really know ourselves, know how to operate at our highest level of integrity, hopefully have a spiritual basis that we can find some identity in, that is a very grounding place. And there's a certain dignity to the individual that you can carry into every situation once you do that work. And I encourage anybody to do it because it is so nice to be able to find safety, security, and worth within yourself rather than based on all the myriad things changing constantly in the world to
Speaking of change, Jacqueline, and you know, the 12-step programs really emphasize the need for change. Quite often there's various slogans that I'm sure that you're familiar with some of them, and said, if nothing changes, then nothing changes. And, you know, you know, getting clean and sober is simple. Just, you know, just put down the drug and change everything. And, you know, some of the things that you're talking about are exactly about change. And I get some great advice many years ago. And, you know, I always felt that I suffered from low self-esteem. And that was one of the issues and things that were holding me back. And, you know, just kind of a social uneasiness that resulted from that. And a wise old person said to me once, he says, you know, if you want self-esteem, do esteemable things. And I said,
wow, I like that.
And I said,
very nice.
I said, wow, you know. And he goes, it's pretty simple. It doesn't cost you anything, you know. Stop and say hi to a stranger or something like that, you know. And it doesn't make any difference the response they give you, you know. Depending on your location, they might swear at you or something. But it's just the idea that you get in those kind of habits and those changes, and you know, that it does wonders for your self-esteem and things. So we're up against our final break, and when we come back, I'd just like to get some more information about Addiction Hope, how people can contact you and so forth. So once again, folks, this is Common Ground. Jim Hall, your host, and my guest, Janet Eckern, the founder and president of Addiction Hope. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Phyllis Nielsen from the Daniel Webster Estate in Marshfield, and we'll be hosting our 6th annual Family Fun Day on Sunday, July 27th from noon to 4 p.m. on the lawns and meadows around our 1880 Victorian mansion. Fun, food, music, vendors, and lots of children's activities. The Plymouth County Sheriff's Department will set up their children's ID program in the mansion's drawing room. Family Fun Day is our summer fundraiser. Admission is free. See you there.
I'm Peter of Tiny and Sons Glass. I got a great idea, namely the Plymouth Boys and Girls Club. You want your kids to have fun and learn too. Well, summer is always fun, and learning should be fun. The most powerful learning experience come through games and teamwork, not classrooms. Try out the Boys and Girls Club at Plymouth. Your kids will never forget what you did for them. Hey, it doesn't sound like it, but they are learning.
Check out the fun at bgcplymouth.org.
Our region has the unfortunate distinction as one of the most opiate-soaked places in the country. And as the summer literally heats up, local law enforcement expect heroin use and overdoses to do the same. All this week and next week, WATD's Charles Mathewson presents a series on the problem and what people are doing about it. The heroin epidemic of southeastern Massachusetts. Mornings at 5:27 and 9:11, and during the WATD Midday Report at noon on 95.9 WATD.
Welcome back, folks, to Common Ground. And Jacqueline, before we get any further, I want to make sure that we get some information out about how people can contact you and your organization. I know there are many people that are involved in this conversation, even though the two of us are the only ones that are actually verbalizing, but we have many listeners on here, and I know that there are people that are interested in getting the both the help and the counseling and advice and information, important information that you offer on your website. So please give us some information about it.
So Eating Disorder Hope is just that, eatingdisorderhope.com. And Addiction Hope is addictionhope.com. And those are mobile friendly, so you can get it on your cell phone or iPad, whatever you need. And on those sites, you will find a national directory of treatment providers and support groups, inspirational recovery stories. And as a sideline, we have a great, inspiring story by Jim Hall featured on Addiction Hope. And if you're interested in reading that, you can just go to Addiction Hope and do a search. There's a search box there of Jim Hall, and it'll come right up.
You know, after 50 minutes of this every week, people are probably sick about hearing my story. But thank you anyway. It was a pleasure that you had an interest, and I was happy to oblige and give some information. So. I had another question, please, Jacqueline, and that is something that's called, what are process addictions?
Yeah, very interesting to me. I've attended some addiction conferences recently for professionals just over the last 2 years and learned a lot more about process addictions. And these typically include things like a gambling addiction, compulsive spending, sexual addiction, in some cases food addiction, and we are very interested in supporting individuals in all of these. I think
why are they referred to as process addictions?
Well, I think a process addiction differs because it's a compulsive behavior rather than a substance that you're taking into your body.
I see.
But going back to neuroscience, they're starting to be able to do brain scans and see that certain parts of the brain light up for different individuals. So for me, let's say you put Twinkies in front of me with my eating disorder background, I'd probably just light right up. But another individual might not be that interested, and their brain would not show all the colors and lighting in the brain scan. But when they saw them online on a gambling site, boy, that would light up certain arenas. So, and there's more to it than that, too. There's also the study of these feel-good brain chemicals like dopamine, norepinephrine, and serotonin. Right. And it's I think that they're learning that there are certain triggers for different individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And even more exciting about that is I think they're getting to a place where they will be able to see who has a predisposition to different types of disorders or addictions and be able to help them be aware of that vulnerability ahead of the fact.
Right. I am a firm believer that that a lot of this, it's a brain disease, a brain disorder, and a lot of it is brain chemical related on there. And again, I am not a medical professional, folks, believe me, and or a professional anything. I'm not even a professional radio host here. I'm just here trying to help people out and because I've been helped. Anyway, you know, and Dr. Kelly talked about that, and especially, as you mentioned, serotonin and dopamine, especially. On there, and I would assume that some of these process addictions we're talking about, the process being, you know, something like gambling and so forth, where it doesn't involve direct substance, they still, as you said, light up certain areas, and they probably release dopamine on there in some pleasurable type of chemical, and the receptors pick that up. And the way he explained it is, what part of the problem is that it's more than the normal amount, much more than the normal amount of these chemicals that get released. And so the receptors are really, the brain itself is overwhelmed. And the receptors that these chemicals attach themselves to as a defense mechanism, they start shutting down. So there's less connection for that chemical to reach over a period of time. It gets less and less because there's so much of it flowing in. And he says it's almost like listening to very, very loud music, and you have a tendency to want to put your fingers in your ears because you're overloaded with too much noise. And that's, he says, that's what the brain's doing. And as a result, it requires more and more. And, you know, that's the whole, you know, the component of addiction. And I think that you can speak to it perhaps from the food angle of things, but certainly with substances, and I'm sure it probably holds too with gambling and sex and other things, whatever it is. And that's kind of where that tolerance ends up building up, and more is required.
Yes. I have been reading quite a bit of research on that too. In fact, there was a Stanford University publication that anybody can look up. It's called Neuroscience of Need, Understanding the Addicted Mind. And it talks about just what Dr. Kelly was saying, that when we take in a foreign substance, say an opiate, it's almost like putting a heavy thumbprint on those feel-good brain chemicals. And it's hard for the things that are normally pleasurable in life to equate that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it changes the brain structure, and that feeds into the craving.
You're exactly right, because you don't get pleasure from other things like that. You're exactly right, Jacqueline.
Yeah, isn't that just so interesting? And I think it's helpful for individuals to read some of the research, because it takes that stigma away. We're starting to learn how complex this is, and
mm-hmm.
that in most cases, individuals are really doing their best to try to self-soothe, cope, deal with extreme demand of their brain and body for more
mm-hmm.
of the chemical,
mm-hmm.
more of the substance or the behavior, to just feel a state of equilibrium. It's not even after some period of time, as most, I think, individuals that are addicted can tell you, it's not as great. It's just to feel decent,
right,
that they
right.
have to continue on.
And the one of the problems is that these things don't repair themselves right away. They can, from what Dr. Kelly was saying, they can repair themselves, and quite often, you mentioned earlier, new pathways open up, and there's new receptors that develop and things over time. But, you know, they do repair, but it takes a long time, and that's why it's so hard for people in early recovery, especially with substance abuse anyway, is that, and I guess the same thing would apply to food as well, is when they change their behaviors, or in the case of substance abuse, and they put the drug or the alcohol down, and they're not abstinent, and they're not using, that because of this thumbprint that's been placed on the neurons there, as you said, they don't get pleasure. And all of a sudden, you don't have the alcohol or drugs, which really wasn't doing much anyway because you had to use more and more of it and you weren't getting the effect. But now that's out of the picture and you're just not getting pleasure from anything in life. And you're just saying, you know, this sucks, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're miserable. And they'd say, you know, I'd rather use. You know, and that's why it's so hard. But if people can get through that, and that's why it's so important that you use the tools that are out there, you know, talk to professionals or other people that are in recovery, and you can let them know, and you can say, hey, this is what I'm feeling like. You know, I'm miserable, and I thought recovery was going to be great. And they can just say, hey, don't worry. You're right where you should be. You know, I went through this. And, you know, a counselor can give them tools to work with you know, that's why it's we have to get this information out here. So, and you're doing a wonderful, wonderful job of it. Please, Jacqueline, I want to thank you again very, very much. This has been a wonderful conversation. I'd love to have you back on again as well. And give the name of the two websites again, please.
Thank you. AddictionHope.com and EatingDisorderHope.com.
All right, wonderful. Thank you so much, Jacqueline. It's really been a pleasure talking with you this evening. And, oh, you know, I'm looking at my clock here, and the clock in the studio is a little bit different than the one that's actually the real clock that's on my phone here. So let's finish up with one last question in here. And let's see. What keeps you devoted to this field day in and day out?
I guess from my gut, it is just that I was so desperate and so miserable and most had given up on me when I was really in the throes of a highly destructive eating disorder. And sort of the miracle of being able to turn that around to where I am actually a stable human being that is able to help some other individuals and lead a productive life using my gifts and talents. I want that for other people, and that is what drives me.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. I feel very much the same way, you know, I feel blessed. I really do, it just, you know, often I question and say, you know, why do I have this opportunity? Why, you know, how was I able to get in recovery and so many don't, you know? But, I don't have the answers to that. But I do know it was a gift, and I am extremely grateful for it. And I owe it, you know, there's a deep sense of an obligation that I feel that I have to do what I can to try to help others. So, you know, it sustains my recovery and it gives me that feeling that, that I always sought for in outside things, you know, substances or whatever, relationships, you name it. And, you know, somehow it, and believe me, it wasn't any magical, genius thought that came into my brain that I suddenly came to this conclusion. You know, I firmly believe that it came from something far bigger and beyond me. But I'm just so happy to have experienced it. So once again, Jacqueline, thank you so much for your time. You've really provided some valuable information. I've really enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you, Jim. I enjoyed our conversation, too.
Okay, well, that's going to wrap it up for tonight, folks. Common Ground host is, I've been your host, Jim Hall. And please, always, always remember, where there's breath, there's hope. We'll see you next week.